you.
How are you doing that, Eugene, with no hands? Or now? About to witness the awesome, crushing might. Turn signal. Of wait for it. Mecha! Yes! Did it without passing out. Well, my friends, welcome to a show that apparently never ends. We're closing in on round 380. I am your host with the most, Eugene S. Robinson. On the occasion of Anderson Silva versus Nick Diaz, I'm gonna zig where others have zagged in reporting on this. But first, the line that sums it all up from Stigmata, The Calling of the Just. The song is called All of Nothing, for those of you who care. Here we go.
I'm on my way back to nowhere. I got my time and I could not see so clear.
Get a real good look at you. I'm taking a real good look at your face. Payback is for always nothing. All right. I don't know. I imagine everybody's sitting around today all geeked out on football fever, patting themselves on the back, super satisfied that everything is all right in the MMA universe. But I am not, to quote Al Pacino from Glengarry Glen Ross, where he says, some men believe that after you die, you go to heaven and play a harp. That's okay. I don't. Some people believe last night's fight was fantastic, was great, was an apogee of MMA glory. That's okay. I don't. So we'll be right back. Gonna do some jujitsu rolling. My mouth is messed up from jujitsu rolling, but we'll talk about that later. We'll see you soon.
All right. Here we are, and I'm going to tell you at the top of the hour, I'm really going to tell you and seriously, urgently want to tell you, and that's very specifically, this is round number 380 for those of you who care. I'm Eugene S. Robinson, like I said in the opener. The S stands for... Stelazine, mostly because the situation with my mouth that I was telling you about has required me to put some, like, Novocaine-esque thing, but it's, like, much more powerful than Novocaine. So my whole mouth is kind of, I should have picked it some other time to do than the time I got to do the show, but it was six of one, half dozen the other, because my mouth hurt too much to talk. And we'll go into what happened with my mouth later. So you're going to have to excuse my over-enunciation for my bashed-up mouth here. But anyway, this is round, as I have said, This is round number on this wonderful face punching Monday. This is round number 380. I'm your host, Eugene Stelazine Robinson. And this is about the UFC that we just saw, very specifically UFC 183. And I'm, you know, fortunately, I've had time, but even if I didn't have time, I would have come out and said exactly what I'm about to say. So I'm going to tell you guys at the top of the hour, if you want some glad handing, some back slapping, hail fellow, well met, joy, if you want some, you know, if you want any of that, if you want anything other than complete and total buzzkill, this is the wrong show for it. I've been on a high note. I've been fairly happily manic the past few shows. I've been flying high, so to speak. But this is a different show. This is kind of a show that harkens back to the deep, dark, fall, gray, miserable, angry. Not really. But my assessment of what we just saw is the only downbeat one I've seen. And this has absolutely nothing to do with Ariel Helwani taking the best journalist in MMA title again. You know, at one point prior to me getting divorced, I had walked in the door, and within 30 seconds of walking in the door, my soon-to-be ex-wife was glowering at me, and I made note of this to a friend of mine, sports agent extraordinaire, was on the show a couple weeks ago, and he says, you know, you're a pretty remarkable guy, but I would be hard-pressed to find something worth remarking in the first 30 seconds. In the first 30 seconds. You know, so I'm going to have to, there's a parallel here. There's a parallel here. And the parallel is that the fight was pretty remarkable. And out of nine picks, I got six right. And I got three wrong, so I had a good night in terms of fight picks. But I find myself finding that remarkable thing that is worth noting in the first 30 seconds. I'm not being very articulate right now. My mouth is killing me. Let me explain to you from top to bottom what happened. And if you've been feeling great about what happened, you might not want to listen to this show. On the outside chance that I start making some sense, you are going to leave this show the way I'm starting this show. And I'm not gonna lead you through it. You know, I know what it was. I'm sorry. That was it. I had to put the cap on the Ariel Helwani thing. That he might be remarkable. But four times in a row, or three times in a row, whatever it's been, it really causes me. I don't know. I know guys who've won Nobel Peace Prizes. I know guys who have rode scholars. I know Guggenheim winners, which you can get multiple times. I don't know anybody who's won anything four times in a row. It causes me to find it less remarkable. Now, if you think I'm trying to get out of setting myself aflame by the time we get to show 251, you're crazy. Because I amended it to guarantee that there was some action. If I had said, look, if by show 251 I haven't been elected MMA Journalist of the Year, you'd say, hey, Eugene, you might as well set yourself aflame right now, Jack. But I changed it to be a little more competitive. Because I want there's a possibility, there's some... I said, if I'm not nominated by show 251, I will set myself aflame. But, you know, this is starting to feel like a strange casino. Four times in a row. I know he's a good friend with Kid Nate, Ariel Helwani, God love him, but four times in a row. Name somebody you know that's won something four times in a row. Come on, it's craziness. Who's voting this? What set of lunatics is voting this? Doesn't matter. I'm just going for the nomination. I don't need to win. I just need to get at the table. Anyway, it's for this what I'm about to do that I deserve to be respected because nobody else is saying this. It is like the emperor has got some clothes and those clothes are penis. Oh, don't you love the emperor's new clothes? I don't see anything but penis, man. Oh, no, it's a wonderful, resplendent outfit. No, dude's naked on the back of a horse. He's got nothing. Anderson Silva. And you've heard me nut jump Anderson Silva for years. So you know that I'm not just doing this for... This is not some clickbait. This is not some trolling thing. Both of these guys, Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz, you have heard me nut jump forever. Yeah, it's chaos. No, there was no cat here when I sat down. Of course, I sit down and the cat is fucking with my statue from Kush. Get out of there. So, Anderson Silva. So, in other words, my commentary comes, it's not a product of boosterism. You have heard me up these guys forever. Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz. Huge fans. Huge longtime fans. Immense. You wouldn't find bigger fans. But for all of you people who are leaving UFC 183, high-fiving, low-fiving each other, you were guys I trained with today were like, man, that fight was great. That was the most exciting fight I've ever seen. I'm asking you, and I'm going to ask you right now, are you out of your fucking mind? Are you crazy? Guy is naked. Oh, I love that maxi coat. I'm going to tell you what you saw, but refuse to see. I hate to interrupt all the collective fellatio, but I got to. Anderson Silva is back. No, he's not. There's a line from The Right Stuff. Tom Wolfe, you've heard me quote it before. Whether it's in the movie or the book, the line is the same. And when they're looking for test pilots for the early days of the, you know, NASA and so on, and the different military branches were there trying to get their guys in, and one guy is making fun of the Navy guys. He goes, "Hey, I've seen all you Navy guys been going in there all day, you know? You go in there, you all look different. Come out, you all look the same." He goes, "How's that?" He goes, "Scared." I have never seen Anderson Silva. He was scared to death. Scared to death. Backstage, I don't know if you guys have been backstage at the MGM Grand, the warm-up rooms, scared to death. Nick Diaz, relaxed as anything. The walk-in, scared to death. They all come in looking different. They all leave looking the same, scared to death. So scared, you have to ask yourself, hey, you know what? What's he scared of? Is he scared of Nick Diaz? Is it Nick Diaz? I don't think so. They seem perfectly normal at the weigh-in. Face down, very respectful and nice. He gets in. He's everybody is scared to death. Now, if you remember what I said last show, and I repeated on Kid Nate's show. The care don't care preview. I said that this fight was huge. I said the fight had the possibility of having both people leave it as winners, even though somebody had to leave as a loser. I never counted on the corollary being true. That both people were leaving as losers, even though there was a winner. So he's scared to death. He's not scared of Nick Diaz. So what's he scared of? People keep asking about the leg. He says, don't ask about the leg. The leg is fine. Yeah, of course the leg is fine. The leg has got a titanium rod in it. I don't know if you've ever been hit with a guy who's got a leg with a titanium rod in it. It hurts. I mean, I knew after my medial collateral ligament was torn or my ruptured quadricep tendon, they said, oh, you could train after a year. I knew I wasn't really ready. It took me about a year and a half. So I want to call bullshit, but, you know, having a tendon or a ligament, this is different from a bone. I guess bones heal faster, plus the tendon, I mean the titanium. But the guy is squatting, he's running, he's kicking, he's jumping. He was pretty sure if it was ready to go. I mean, he's not, they will sell no wine before it's time. He wasn't going to rush it for what? For what? No reason to. What's he nervous about? What's he nervous about? He's excited. He's got the jitters. He's got the pre-fight jitters. This is nerve-wracking. If you've never fought, I'm nervous before. There's very little that makes me nervous. There were guys running in front of my house shooting back in early December. I got the door open. What? 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 I'm hearing the shells. I'm looking at the guys like, I mean, I'm 25 feet away. But fighting makes me nervous. Sometimes going on stage with Oxbow makes me nervous. I understand the case of nerves. Guy's been out for about a little over a year. But it's not like he's about to lose his virginity. He's done this before. Nick walks in. Very relaxed. They kind of ask him, like, you know, you want to hug your team? You see, as they're in the Harley Davidson Square, whatever the hell they all had square before they slather their faces with Vaseline. Then he's like, nah, no. And he's got Gil, I think. Who does he have in this corner? He has Nate, he had Gil, Caesar. Maybe Jake was there, I don't remember. These guys were relaxed, super relaxed. And the fight starts. The fight itself starts, and I don't know what fight everybody else is looking at. I saw an Anderson Silva fighting scared a guy who came up in weight. You know, and Nick was pretty respectful at the lead up, but in the fight, he was like, you know, this guy's a counter puncher. I got to get him to get off. And one of the guys who was countering my counter was like, oh, you, Anderson Silva. Yeah, he started out scared, but then Nick got so ridiculous and stood in his face. That's really what he needed to jumpstart him, because by the end of the fight, he was the old Anderson Silva. He will never be the old Anderson Silva, but he will be old Anderson Silva, if you know what I mean. I'm just going to cut to the chase right now and tell you what I'm talking about. That was no fight. That was no fight. I know it seemed like a fight. I know it looked like a fight. But that was no fight. Nick, in the post-fight press conference, said, you know, I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of, you know what? He goes, I won every single round. I don't know what's coming on with the judges. You know the little thought balloon that I saw when Nick was talking? I saw Nick in a little thought balloon making this gesture. Yeah, I think I won every round. They say, Joe Rogan says, hey, Nick, who do you want to fight next? And Nick has been doing this for a long time. Dude's 30 years old. He dropped out of high school to do this. any of you had a job for that long? The longest I've had any single job has been 3 years. And that's only because I promised the guy, Bill Adams, my boss, who I would, you know, catch him vomiting on himself in the car in the parking lot. He is now dead. He ended up having some terrible problems. During a job interview, he grabbed my wrist across the table and said, I noticed you tend to stay at each job about 2 years. I need you to stay 2 years here at least. I go, yeah, I'll stay. I need your word. Yeah, you have my word. What about 3 years? I said, okay, 3 years. He goes, what about four? I go, hey, let's just take things as they come. I stayed there 3 years. That's the longest job I've had. Because 2 years is how long it takes for me to figure out they're not going to pay me what I think I'm worth. And I get this proven by finding somebody who will. I mean, come on, man. Come on. The guy's been doing this thing. Nick Diaz has been doing it forever. And what I love about Nick Diaz is that he's like, you know what? He's like that. Who's that guy who played in the football player? It's like, only reason I'm in here is so I don't get fined. Well, what do you think about the only reason I'm here is so I don't get fined. Yes, but the tight end safety secondary team, special team, the only reason I'm here is so I don't get fined. And if I were that football player, I would say, you people in the room are the only ones in this entire country who even remember who won the Super Bowl 3 years ago. Like I said in my recent Aussie piece, this is disposable culture. Nobody remembers this shit. There's a band called the Clit Boys, a punk rock band in like 1982, and they had this song and a 7-inch with the same name. We don't play the game. Nick is like, you know, I'm a fighter. At the end of the evening, I will have fought, but that's it. I'm not going to do the all the dog and the monkey show stuff. You want to get somebody else to do it. And Dana White said, I don't know when Nick is going to fight again. Nick is good, maybe another 3 years, you know. They needed somebody for this Anderson Silva thing. But if you can tell me right now, name right now, five possible matchups, other than Chris Weidman, who will kill him, for Anderson Silva, I'd like to hear him. Nick went into this thing knowing what we all know, and that's that there was not supposed to be any beating of Anderson Silva. There was not supposed to be any of that. There's a plan. Plan didn't have anything to do with Anderson. The plan did not have anything to do with Anderson Silva losing. Oh, you're saying, Eugene, are you trolling us? Are you jumping to conclusions? Are you saying that this is a work? I'm not saying it's a work. That's not what I'm saying at all. A work implies collusion. I'm saying that you got two guys from two different places, you know, doing something in the octagon for different reasons, Anderson Silva, look, this is the functional equivalent of the guy who is hurt on the football field, and they, you know, everybody gathers around and they express concern, and the game is halted, and then he gets up and hobbles off the field and everybody cheers. Or they bring a stretcher out and they take him off and everybody cheers. He's displayed some sort of intestinal fortitude and sports moxie. This is sort of the equivalent, if you get, you know, you get knocked off a horse, you got to get right back in the saddle or some such thing. Say, Anderson, who you want to fight next? How long before, I got to talk to my family about this. I mean, what makes guys like Barry Bonds especially unbelievable, and anybody who's gotten it caught up in any TRT shenanigans, like, you're a professional athlete. You don't know what's going on in your body. Professional athletes, man, they're tuned into, they're baseball players who've been wearing the same underwear from the time they were 17. Driven and riven by superstition, habit, and all kinds of intangibles. It wasn't Nick Diaz that made Anderson Silva nervous. It wasn't his leg that made Anderson Silva nervous. Those were already checked off in known quantities, qualities for him. It was any single athlete's biggest concern. Biggest concern. And it's the Edward G. Robinson line from Little Caesar. Holy Mother of Mercy, could this be the end of poor Rico? It is time. Prophetically, what Bruce Buffer says to start off, it's time to start off the fight. The most terrifying metric of all, time. Or like Oxbow says, time, gentlemen, time. Holy Mother of Mercy, could this be the end of poor Silva? His son is flipped. You see his son at one of those fights. I was in attendance with one of the hot, one of the best judokas in the world was there. Best Olympic taekwondo guy was there. And I don't know that he wants me to mention his name. Let's say he's a poster commenter on Bloody Elbow. He sponsored it. He had everybody on a spreadsheet list their picks. The picks were listed. And the winner, who had the most right picks, won this handcrafted sculpture from Kush, which is Sudan. Yes, I won it. His young son was feverish and attempting to change his daughter was attempting to change the spreadsheet. His son was like, please don't take my sculpture. Don't. I felt like Simon Legree. Of course, I'm taking your sculpture. It's a life lesson. Don't gamble with somebody who wins. So that's what that is doing there. I told him I would send them pictures of it. Great frequency, there it is. I won't mention his kids. You know, people don't know that they won't take their kids' names mentioned or their names mentioned. So it was good. I bested a room full of sage students of the fistic game. In any case, it is time. Yes, yeah, see, nobody wants to go out as that guy. Nobody wants to end their career that way. Yes, he's got signed a 10-fight deal. Yes, but he's in the same room with Nick Diaz, which is fitting that they were in the same cage. It's like, what are you going to do? Dana White says it could be another 3 years before Nick fights again. Nick is a proven draw. Proven draw. But what's he going to do? Is he fighting for the belt? I guess he kind of should, right? I mean, he has beat Lawler before. Lawler is a belt holder. Gonna give him a title shot? Well, what does a guy have to do to get a title? Just be like a guy? You know, just a guy is walking around? Or is there some sort of order or ranking that dictates who makes the picks and how the picks are made? You know, he's like, screw it, man. I got enough money to live in Stockton. Look, I used to live in my car in Stockton. At least I'm not doing that anymore. Anderson Silva, money is not his concern either. Continued relevancy and time are the concerns. Continued relevancy is more of a social issue. Is it Nick, who you're going to fight? I don't know. I want to fight somebody that people would be excited about me fighting, which means I'd be excited about fighting, which means I mean, once that GSP moment happened, it's like it's like being Captain Ahab and hearing that Moby Dick had a heart attack. And what's left? What's left? I've been doing this since I was 16. What's left? You ever think of what the day for the average fighter? Because there's other stuff I like to do a lot more. The triathlons. You think fighting is fun? You fight Anderson Silva. So all the hijinks, I mean, it was like watching The Temptations. The only thing that made it compelling to me is that Anderson Silva was grappling with issues that were non-fight issues. His body worked the same. I mean, this is not something that I was looking for. But seeing him deal with this constant and continual, probably repeated questioning in his head each and every round, it was very tough. And I know that those of you taken in by the monkey shines may not have seen that. Rewatch the fight. These were men grappling with existential issues that were much larger than that cage. I mean, it's why comedians are so downbeat over time. You know, you guys are laughing at the wrong things, man. Comedians haven't figured out what guys in rock bands know. Don't meet your fans. I do it all the time. I don't have any problems. Because I expect a little, and I expect very little, and I get very little. All I want is a couch, some food, and some pleasantly passing conversation. That's it. I don't have very great need, large needs. I just need people not to say stupid things. Oxbow fans can be counted on at least 67% of the time to not say stupid things to my face. So Oxbow fans, all right. Bloody Elbow fans, however, I have to say, you guys, your vig is much higher. Because I think we can say that the guys who say, you suck, you're an asshole, Eugene, those guys don't really count as, it's a statistical thing, they don't count as fans, so I can't, their input is less than significant to me. Who's that guy complaining about the music? And this music, I'm sorry, I can't hear you, the bullshit music is too loud. So you know, I mean, it's like dealing with I was watching a documentary, Born Into It, about Bukowski. And unlike, I've met Allen Ginsberg and Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Peter Orlovsky, Ken Kesey. And there's a big difference between the beats and like somebody like Bukowski. But the worst thing about them both were the fans that came for the wrong reasons. Bukowski's reading a poem about taking a big beer shit, and everybody's like, woo! You're cheering big beer shits. Are you a fan of a big beer shit? You've had a big beer shit that you really want commemorated. This is somehow a significant milestone in your life. The point is that yes, it was nice to see. It was like having a band play a cover song. Or better yet, having a band cover one of their songs. Or better yet, having the Rolling Stones play again Ruby Tuesday or some song that you're street fighting, man, that you really liked. Seeing Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz in there, I liked it. That made me happy to see them in there. But what they were doing, if you had that naked lunch moment, what they were doing was imminently, you know, I mean, they wouldn't have to do this if there was any other reasonable conclusion that could be reached. By which I mean, if there were somebody bigger and better to be in there, they'd have been in there. So like they said about Colonel Kurtz, He didn't want to die as some wastrel. He just wanted to die on his own terms, like a soldier on his feet. The same could be said about Anderson Silva. That's why he squashed that shit right away. Who you want to fight next? He's like, I need to talk to my family. And Nick Diaz said, hey, man, come on, get up. There's no crying in MMA. And what Nick Diaz was saying in my mind was like, you know what? It's a job, Jack. We got paid. It's a job. We got paid. Go home. Count your money. Hug your wife. Play with your kids. You know? Because there's no reality to any of this. You know, it is a weird existential place to be in. And I have to say myself, when I got to a moment like that in my life, it was a really weird place to be in. Of course, I wasn't competing. It wasn't about competing. It wasn't about jobs for me. It wasn't about any of that. It's probably in a relationship setting. I just figured hell, high water, try or not try, which brings us back full circle to Bukowski, who's got on his gravestone, don't try. We're hurtling through space, clinging to a rock, to certain death. Some things matter a lot. The happiness of my kids matters a lot to me. But the people who care, who I care about, who care about me, these things matter a lot. But the rest of it, get up. There's no crying in MMA, Nick Diaz says to an overcome with emotion, Anderson Silva. Do you think Anderson Silva was happy, was overcome with emotion because he beat Nick Diaz? Do you think he was overcome with emotion because he didn't get beaten by Nick Diaz? Do you think that Nick Diaz was a complete non-factor in the equation that had everything to do with him collapsing in the cage? Do you believe Nick Diaz when Nick Diaz says, I think I won every single round? Do you believe Nick Diaz when he says in a post-fight presser, I'm sick of being a loser? I don't believe either Anderson Silva or Nick Diaz, I don't think a single one of them told a lie. So when I'm asking, do you believe it? I'm not asking whether or not they lied. Or like I told some young charge of mine at some point, it's not so much that I lie, it's just that I say things that don't end up coming true. The orientation is very different. I think this is the Emmett Smith moment. It's not a miracle that Emmett Smith did what he did. It's a miracle, really, if you think about it, that he did it for as long as he did. Because there are pitfalls and minefields aplenty. And in MMA, what you don't see and what all of these guys have said to a person, from GSP to Anderson Silva, is that this is a tough job. They didn't say fighting was a tough job. They said this is a tough job. Even that football player who showed up at the press conference said, I'm here so I don't get fined. I'm here so I don't get fined. I'm here so... You know what he's doing today? Well, I guess he just lost a Super Bowl. Was he a Seahawk? I don't remember. Well, let's say for the sake of argument, do we know what he's doing a week from now? Nothing. He's off season. They have off seasons. Fighters do not have off seasons. They have times where they're not fighting. It's like worse than being an actor. If you're a successful actor, you're only as successful as your last job. You realize as soon as you wrap a movie, you're unemployed. You go back to reading scripts. It's a weird roller coaster if you're anybody but Tom Cruise. And even Tom Cruise, the money ceases being an issue. What am I going to do with my time? man, my numbers were down on Jack Reacher. The hell am I going to do? The hell am I going to do? I'm 52 years old. Let's assume I'm going to live another 40 years doing what? Existential concerns. That's why people stay in too long. A la Dan Henderson, who almost lost his eye. I don't say Dan Henderson has stayed in too long. I'm saying that, call it music, call it coffee. Stuff happening around you that you should smell or hear. They're playing your song, Jack. So, yes, I like seeing those. I was excited as all get out for the fight. I love seeing those guys do, you know, do what they do in their respective. But I could have gotten the same thing from going to the pre-fight workout, which Nick didn't show up for. But if you can tell me where either of these cats go in a way that's going to get them engaged, they're disengaged for different reasons. Whether it's the Anderson Silva fear fuel disengagement, like, I just don't. This is it. Mother of mercy. Could this be the end? Anxiety-ridden, fear-fueled, or is it just the ennui of a Nick Diaz? Like, man. And if 3 years wasn't enough, you know what Nick Diaz probably has been doing 3 years? Other stuff. I mean, outside of, you know, whatever. Bike riding, swimming, jiu-jitsu. Try having a job for 12 years. Any job. Some of you, very few of you actually have. I guarantee you. And those who have know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, I'm not going to fixate on this. I just have to say that, like the great line from Reservoir Dogs, before we start sucking each other's dicks, think about what you saw. The other fights. The other fights on the card. You know, what is it? What is it? What is it? What is it? He's back. No, he's not. No, he's not. He was no kind of back. He was there, but he's not back. It not normal. He's not back. So fortunately, the commenter, the poster whose house I watched the fight at, like I said, I don't know if he wants me to mention his name, so I'm not being rude, I'm just trying to be respectful. He listened to the Kid Nate's show, and he noted my picks. So who screwed me? Tom Watson screwed me by losing. Jordan Means screwed me by losing. And Kelvin Gastelum screwed me by losing. Tom Watson got the crap beat out of him by Rafael Natal. Great fight. John Lineker and Watson deserved to lose. Sending me down one. John Lineker beat the crap out of Ian McCall, about whom I said, gotten too used to losing. Which is now what everybody else is saying. What is this guy? What are we going to do with this guy now? What's he going to do? Okay. John Lineker's having weight problems. Had to hear from, in a Pavlo Hummel-esque way, had to hear from Anthony Rumble Johnson about weight problems. It's just, hey, don't fight the feeling, like the song said. Derek Brunson beat the slop out of Ed Herman. I called that one. Miesha Tate against Sarah McMahon. I felt bad picking against Sarah McMahon. She had that whole video thing with her daughter. Cute as can be. Cute as a button. Endearing. And I've been down on Miesha because she keeps sending me bikini photos. What do you mean she's sending you bikini photos, Eugene? Well, she's not sending them to me specifically. But, you know, as a Twitter friend, she keeps tweeting these things out. I have to assume that she knows she sent them to me. I do not need to see this woman in a bikini. I don't care. I don't care. But I did pick her to win, and she did win. Thiago Alves, man, I really wanted to pick him, but it'd been so long. It'd been so long. And I have to say, what happened with Jordan Mean? He got cute. He got cute. You remember the little somersault thing he did to get out from against the cage? You know, I fought against a guy once who was a capoeira guy, and I just timed it. I'm not a great fighter. Let me just say that. I'm telling you these stories not because I'm a great fighter, but because I thought they were instructive and amusing. And the guy, once I got the guy does that, they're gonna the cartwheel, I just grabbed him. Like that great, where Bob Sapp grabbed that guy, Ricardo, and Pride grabbed him, his feet in the air, his hands down, pile drove him into the canvas. Of course, he lost the fight. Not Ricardo Alameda. Maybe it was him. So good on Thiago Alves. I always liked that guy. Always liked him. He's been out too long. And Jordan Mean at number 13, maybe he lost a step or two. I don't know. I'm guessing he left his dad at home. Maybe that was part of the problem. How are you going to concentrate when you got a dad like that in your corner? You stay in that corner. He's looking out the cage, making sure his dad's not wandering off. Tim Boach versus Thales Leyes. Thales Leyes, you know, it was a great line from Pulp Fiction. Pride hurts. Pride hurts. You're going to stand up with Boach to prove that you've been working on your stand-up? Screw that. He didn't have any success in that fight, really. Until he took Boach to the... He got Boach down. Screw this, man. My face looks like a pomegranate. Al Iaquinta beat the slap. Who was reffing that fight? I enjoyed that. Oh, man, my mouth is killing me. I enjoyed that to the highest degree, but, you know, seeing Joe Lauzon stagger around there... that was kind of hardcore, but you know what? When a ref lets a fight go on that long, there's not a lot of protest when he stops it. Not a lot of protest when he stops it. Actually, people are pretty okay when he stops it. Ally and Kinta. You know what? It's such an emotional game. You could see he wasn't sure. He wasn't sure how he was doing, and when he gets back to the corner, Ray Longo says, "Kid, you look great out there. You look relaxed. You're just taking it to him." Whether or not that was true, because he didn't really seem that way the first round, it became true. And this is what people say: "Oh, the winning is teams. What the team magic? You know, team magic insofar as it exists." And say in China, politically, in China, things are weird. If there's an earthquake and a hurricane, they start to blame the leadership. Even though we know that these are acts of God, they start to think that the leadership is somehow offended the gods. Your team can help focus certain trends for you. Create. I had a woman complain about me once, and she said, "You created an environment where everything seemed possible." She didn't say this in a complimentary way. And in fact, she was trying to blame me for her post-relationship debauchery, of which there was 2 or 3 years full. So I'm not taking a ride for that. I created an environment where anything was possible. That's different from everything being probable, likely. I didn't make you have sex with strangers in parking garages. Please, I will not take responsibility for this. Kelvin Gastelum. You know what I like about Kelvin and Tyron? They both have first names that are very easy to mispronounce. Kelvin, you might say Kevin? No, Clevin? No, Kelvin? Kelvin. Tyron could be Tyrone. Tyrone. Terrible fight. Hey, listen, word for the wise. The best thing that came out And actually, the way that one of the ways that Tyrone Woodley endeared her, at one point, I remember saying to a guy who the guy who tried to sue me over this fight book, if you remember, I won't mention his name. He doesn't need the press. But I said in an early UFC, I go, how could that guy take the trophy? Take the at that point, I would say, hey, I clearly lost. I'm sorry. I don't know what the judges were thinking. I clearly lost. Let the other guy have it. I refuse to take it. It stays there, or he can take it. I'm not. And the guy looked at me like I was an idiot. He goes, who are you? Are you a judge? No, you're a fighter. You're not a judge. Judges had a job. They did their job. They were seeing things that you yourself weren't seeing. We argued about this for a long time. I said, you know, you don't have to tell me it's rain for me to know it's raining. You know you've been beat. If you've been beat, he goes, no, you don't know that. You don't know. You don't, you're not able to judge. I said, well, yeah, I've thought about fights. And the only way at this street fight I know that I've won is the other guy's laying there at the end. So Tyrone pulls victory out of the jaws of defeat by doing something, the most amazing thing ever, which I think we can safely say has not happened before. He gave money back to Kelvin Gastelum, who didn't make weight, came in 9 pounds overweight, was hospitalized trying to lose 9 pounds, and came back and was not himself for the fight. Had to go through with the fight, took it anyway, and added, you know, screw the undefeated record thing. The guy probably was not in the right place. I picked him to win this, and I think he'd have won, but winning it for what? What? For what? He's losing 30%. It's not on the record. You know, it's not. I mean, failure start way back, and Tyron said it best. Not Tyrone, Tyron said it best. He said, you know, there are a lot of people who are responsible for this. He's got a team. Apparently, he's got a dietitian and nutritionist on that team. He's got a coach. He's got lots of guys standing in line behind this stuff. Lots of folks sharing the fact that he's 9 pounds overweight. Listen to Anthony Rumble, baby. Or, who was it? Zayn Simon. Who told me in a quiet moment when I was having a dark night of the jiu-jitsu soul, said, the reality of it is, as more your quality as a jiu-jitsu player is much more significant than whatever weight you're rolling at. Since then, I haven't worried about my weight, whatever. I did get closed out of the San Francisco Open. I was gonna compete in the San Francisco Open, because it's in San Francisco, and for the first time ever, a month out, registration is closed. They got too many guys. I can't imagine they have too many guys in my division, however. But I'm closed out. Large numbers of members of Team Sorrow, Team Dream Crush, are closed out. The Johnnies on the spot are in, so I think that's half of us. Yeah, I'm sort of distressed because I missed this last one because I hurt my back. It still hurt. Which is what happened with the mouth thing. I'm generally such an insane person to roll with that people go very rough with me. Except when I'm hurt and I say, hey, look, I'm really actually hurt. Now I'm going to go as hard as I can, but I'm hurt. So we're going to gi, and the guy loops his gi around my hand. And I go, that's really pointless. You're holding my hand in the exact place where I want to hold it. And I realized I made the guy feel, you know, I kind of chumped him out. I'm questioning. So he's taking the gathers out of my gi, wrapped it around my hand, held it to my chest. And then he grabs the gathers in his fist, and he uses that anchor point, which is over here, to bring his forearm down across my mouth. I do this a lot. I usually go for the throat. The guy tucks his throat. You know, I'll do exactly what this guy did. I'll bring it down across the chin or across the open section of the mouth. But not a guy who's just told me he's injured. If I wasn't injured, I could bump the guy off so he starts cranking it down. I wasn't wearing a mouthpiece, and I could feel the inside of my mouth cutting. I'm bleeding. I could taste the blood in my mouth. And I said, start to open my mouth. I'm like, hey, man. And as soon as I opened my mouth a little bit, the forearm anchored to the grate. It's this part of his forearm, that part right there. He just cracked, and I feel my jaw separating. And your brain sort of clicks into this space where you just got to go, I'm about to be murdered. It would be frantic action if I didn't know what I was doing. It was super directed action at that point. Because the guy was so geared for the tap, I clearly couldn't let him have it. But my mouth is messed up. And my back is still screwed up. And now I quote Carl Gotch when he said he first started grappling in Belgium. He said, you know, they would beat the crap out of him with savagely, with no mercy. He said, all right, you guys are paying into a bank account that I'll pay you out of later. Anyway, so Woodley did the great, manned up, gave the cash back, really nice, loved that moment, but that fight was dog shit. It was dog shit. Let me count the ways in which it was dog shit. You know, and Woodley is like, well, you know, we were sportsmen. Yeah, hey man, if I want to see a sportsman, I'll go watch some guys go fishing. It's a fight. Fight. Yes, there's a process of feeling out. I mean, what? This is the kind of thing that breeds hopelessness. And the worst part about it was this idea that I got the sense that if I added five more rounds to it, we get five more rounds of the exact same thing. So you're right now you're saying, Eugene, I don't understand what you're saying. I really can't put my finger on what it is you've said. I know you're saying these are good. Well, outside of Kelvin Gastelum and Tyron Woodley, outside of that fight, these all sound like they were good fights, don't you think? They were good fights, and yet you don't seem to feel like they were good. That they were good fights. No, I feel like they were good fights. Yet you seem displeased with the entire... Yeah, I'm displeased. Are you displeased with the fact that these are good fights? I am displeased with the fact... Excuse me. I told you I'm ill. I am displeased with the fact that the headliner was so deeply, deeply flawed and in total and full consideration the facts that have come to light, depressing. All you guys screaming, he's back. He's not back. That Anderson Silva that you think is back, you will never see again. And that Nick Diaz that once was will never return. And the Eugene Robinson that you're seeing at around 380 is not the same one that will be there 379. I know. But this is different. Everything changes. Nothing the same. We're all adrift in a river. Where every moment is new, but every moment is the same. But if you haven't thought of this, think about it now. Think about it now. And I'm referencing something that Richard Milhouse Nixon said. You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore. Well, yeah, you actually do you did have Nixon to kick around for quite a bit. He made it possible to kick him around for quite a bit more. In an MMA perspective, in an MMA perspective, you know, if you've watched the game long enough, there was a time when you were super excited about Wrecking Machine, Mark Kerr. Man, Mark Coleman, there are going to be guys who come along and go, are you going to be excited about it again? But, you know, you take somebody who was dominant for a long time. I mean, Nick Diaz from Pride. Anderson Silva, fantastic. Somebody comes along and replaces him. This is one of the reasons why I'm so high on... John Jones, guy that you love to hate, because you know what? The longer the guy stays around, the more you're going to miss him. You got Mike Tyson, you know, you got Muhammad Ali, you got Larry Holmes as a cautionary tale. Who else you got? When you're face to face with the guy, appreciate that it's a guy. Appreciate it deeply and seriously. So, yes, UFC was a stunning. UFC 183 was stunning. Partially for expected reasons, good fights. But partially for unexpected reasons. I'm not going to call Anderson Silva. I'm going to change a little bit what I said. I'm not going to say Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz was a terrible fight, because when I use that word terrible, you'll judge it by, base it on a standard that exists by which other fights have been terrible. He said, well, he said Silva and Diaz was terrible and Gastelum and Woodley was terrible. These were the same types of terrible. You can eat cat poop and you can eat dog poop, and these are completely different types of terrible, I would imagine. There were good fights on the card, with the exception of Gastelum and Woodley. And I even say Woodley's act of sportsmanlike behavior afterward, I'd say was pretty admirable. Nothing in the cage was exciting with that fight, but you know, I wouldn't call it a terrible fight. It was not a great fight. It's boring. But Anderson Silva versus Nick Diaz was stunning. I'm not going to say awesome, because we're so used to that word meaning something good, but stunning says it all. The fear on Silva's face, the ennui, the blasé Nick Diaz, laying down, it's like, oh, they asked him about it. He's like, you know what? It's what you guys want, right? You got, isn't that what you guys want? Yeah, you know. Some guy wrote it. I don't like so much Eugene's prostitute stories, or hookers, or porn stars, or sex stuff, whatever. But you know, I mean, he wasn't saying, he's just like, I don't care that much for him, but you know, I could take him or leave him, is kind of what he was saying. But that story I told you about the prostitute who was wanting to give the, it was just some friend of mine's story. It was one candles and body work and oils and rubbing. And he's like, hey, hey, hey. And she goes, oh, I guess you're just here for the fucking, eh? Or the plumber who's standing knee deep in a trench in my backyard saying like, hey, I'm not a plumber. You're a fighter. Yeah, maybe. I just gave you what you wanted. I guess you just want to fuck then. Is there another reason I would have come to a prostitute? Chess, maybe. Ask you your opinions about world politics. In other words, Nick Diaz is saying, I gave you what you wanted. You wanted to see me do the stuff that, you know, the jokey, the monkey shines. There your monkey shines. Make you happy. Or to quote the Sex Pistols from San Francisco, last show of the tour ever. Check it out on Who Killed the Great Rock and Roll Swindle. You ever feel like you've been ripped off? got to come a time where you got to let these guys go. There's got to be a time when fighter development kicks in and they're finding guys who are the new Young Turks. Nothing shameful. Nothing shameful about any of these guys. Just let them go. Because it's hard to see if you're really seeing what's there to be seen. And if you haven't seen that, watch it again and you tell me what you see. It could just be me. I was in a good mood before. This is round 380. I'm Eugene S. Robinson, S standing for Stelazine. We'll see you next week. Look what you made me do!